Good day, greetings, hello. It is Art at the End of the World, the podcast that features artists, entertainers, and cultural leaders speaking on what it is to make art here at the end. My name is Mark Wigmore. This is my podcast. Welcome to the Thursday edition. We call it Bonus Round. This is our 8th bonus round and our 16th episode, and great to have you along. Today, very exciting, 3 sets of lists from the legendary broadcaster, musicologist, music historian, and beloved radio personality, John Donaghy. 2013 inductee to the Canadian Broadcast Industry Hall of Fame, and very deserving at that. John was my guest for something of an epic conversation earlier this week. It is worth a listen, especially if you are a music lover. He has great stories to tell. So that is Monday's episode, episode 8. Today is really special, too. We've put together 3 bonus round lists. John's top 5 albums of all time, and that I'm sure didn't come easily. His favorite top 5 interview moments with names from the arts world. Totally fascinating. And we start with the best concerts that he ever saw and why. And during bonus round today, we play music from all the picks. So it was a bit of a monster to put together, but we did do it. And really, I think this is the best bonus round that we have managed because the stories are so rich and it's great to hear the music interweaved into the show. John has kind of done it all, being on radio and television, covering the arts, covering music, the formats, jazz, rock, pop, country, classical. And his enthusiasm for great music is pretty obvious. He's interviewed so many people. He spent a lot of time at venues, hanging around with artists and introducing them on stage. He has a massive vinyl collection. I can't wait for you to hear John's bonus round lists. A reminder that Art at the End of the World is brought to you by 4 very important sponsors. Kerner Hall at the Royal Conservatory of Music. Great events coming their way over the next few weeks. Salter Street Brewery, the East End Brewery Haven, Superframe Framing Services in downtown Toronto, and Red Eye Media, supporting and representing arts organizations throughout Toronto, Ontario, and this country. A reminder that you can support this podcast as well on Patreon. A little quiet on Patreon lately. If you would like to visit patreon.com/artattheendoftheworld. That's patreon.com/artattheendoftheworld if you'd like to pitch in. So let's get to it. 3 top 5 lists from one of the great names in radio, great names in broadcasting, John Donaghy. And when the conversation actually picks up here, we've just talked about John actually being at, attending the famous Last Waltz with the band. So here we go. From his kitchen table in Scarborough, Ontario, this is Bonus Round. Since we're talking about The Last Waltz and some of these great interviews and so on and so forth, maybe we should go through some rapid-fire lists here.
Rapid-fire.
Yeah, what do you say? And,
okay.
You are a man who has listened to so many records. You're a musicologist. You've been to so many concerts. You've interviewed so many people. It's got to be tough for you to narrow down some of these top 5 lists. But we'll start with, why don't we start, since we're talking about concerts, let's start with concerts. John Donaghy's top 5 concerts that he ever saw. I can't even imagine what these would be, except I have one in mind.
Ry Cooder live at Convocation Hall.
What year is
in
that?
In 71 or 72, and he has this backup rhythm guitar player. No need to have him. In fact, I asked John Hyatt, how did you end up on that tour? Yeah. He said, I was starving. Ry saved my life.
Wow.
So he went on the tour. So here I'm at Con Hall, I'd leak into another part maybe of what you're going to ask me about interviews, but Ry Cooder live at Convocation Hall would probably be number 5.
I feel like Convocation Hall was one of those great venues at a certain point, and I feel it's so sad that they don't use it. It's right on the U of T grounds.
Yeah, the big round building.
And they just don't use it that much. I saw Bruce Coburn there once.
I emceed so many shows there. Yeah. The 90s band played there, you know? So Ry Cooder.
Great Ry Cooder, still going.
Which still is going. All right, got to see him at Massey Hall a while back.
Number 4.
Number 4 would be James Brown live at Maple Leaf Gardens. Got to MC two of his shows.
What year is this?
We're talking around 68, 69.
So he is just in it.
Oh, he's at the peak. And on the second show, he told me just to come to his stage door. So I go up to the door, and there's a guy there, man. I'm telling you. He's like 6'8", you know, wow. 300 pounds.
Yeah.
What do you want?
I'm here to see Mr. Brown.
I wasn't really talking like that. But, and he said, "Yeah, sure you are."
In your mind's eye, yeah. That's how it's.
And I said, "Would you mind just opening the door and tell him it's John Donaghy here?" Okay, yeah, James or Mr. Brown, some guy named John. Get in here.
Yeah.
And we talked for a while, and he offered me a job in Macon, Georgia, at one of his radio stations.
Wow.
And being the chicken I am, just like when Seals and Cross offered me a job to be a road manager, I'm really busy, you know.
Right. I don't know that you would have wanted James Brown to be your boss.
No, I don't think so.
I think he made a wise decision.
I think the funniest part
there's no chickening out there.
There's no. The funniest part of seeing James Brown is I would leave the stage area and I'd go down about halfway to watch him, right? And there's a big cop standing to me. Oh, you're the MC guy, right? Yeah. What's all this talk about James Brown being, nothing's happening here. I said, give it 5 minutes. He goes into please, please, please. They start coming down from the grays, Mark.
Oh,
and the place went insane.
Yeah.
And when I went to take him off, some girl, you know, they used to have people behind the stage above.
Yeah, yeah.
She jumped.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was heading for my back. And one of his big bouncers just went right over top of me. And he took the fall. So there's one.
That's great. James Brown at the height of his power. Pretty impressive.
John Lennon and the Plastic Ono Band at Varsity Stadium.
Interesting choice. Now, of course, a legendary concert. And so many incredible people played that during that festival. But it's not everybody's cup of tea as far as what John was up to at that point.
When I tell people this part, they go, what? Like Little Richard, was it Little Richard that came on after John? Him I love. But the Doors closed the show, not John Lennon.
Right.
And I walked out then. I didn't like Jim Morrison. I didn't like the Doors.
Yeah.
So I left. But Lennon, just to watch him. Then, of course, Yoko got into that white bag with that. I went, oh, my God.
Yeah.
But there's
this
Eric.
This is what I'm talking about. It's not everybody's cup of tea.
No. There's
that period.
Eric Clapton on lead guitar and Alan White and Klaus Voormann, who did the Revolver album cover on bass.
Wow.
You know, and the guy from Yes on drums.
Yes, I'm lonely.
That was something, and of course, they only could do old rock and roll.
Bill Bruford, is that?
No, it wasn't Bill Bruford.
Okay.
It was, would Alan White have been the guy on drums? Anyway, it's a long time
sort
ago,
of a super, a super band.
It was a super group.
Of types.
Yeah.
Good one, number three, all right.
Here we go. That would be...
I'm sad to hear about the Doors, by the way. I was
yeah,
such a big
I know,
fan.
I know.
Fan. You walked out on Jim Morrison? Come on.
I walked out on Jim Morrison. Number two would be... The Last Waltz, 1976.
Interestingly, I think people would have thought that would be number one.
I know.
But
I know. And it was sensational. It was incredible. I have a big sign in the other room. I still have my Last Waltz button that I had to wear to walk around through security.
I guess it is worth noting, though, it was a different experience than what people see in that film. I mean, it was, like you point out,
oh, yeah,
a lot longer. A
lot longer. The cameras kept burning out.
Right.
That's why you don't get to see. There is a black, on YouTube, there's a black and white video of stuff you don't get to see in the movie.
Right.
Scorsese says nobody'd ever use cameras like that for that length of time. You know, but
there's also people have talked about audio recordings without the sweetening that we're so used to on the movie.
Well, I'll tell you what I do have upstairs. Yeah. I have a bootleg called The Complete Last Waltz. And you know now, I mean, it's all John Simon talks about it in his new book because John was there for the mixing of the album.
Right.
I mean, Robbie is playing notes off. Rick is playing notes off. Garth had a hum on his Lowry organ. The only person who didn't come back for overdubs was Levon because he was perfect.
Right.
And he never had a problem. But all of them had to come back and re-record many parts. So John Simon says, watch the film again, John. Watch their mouths really closely. And they'll be just a tiny bit out because we couldn't match them sometimes.
Right.
But there was a lot of re-recording. So anyway, that night was sensational, the rehearsals, etc.
Yeah.
Number one, I'm working in Oshawa and I hear about a concert coming to Massey Hall. Bob Dylan, and he's bringing with him the Hawks.
It's 1965
November.
Dylan goes electric,
two nights in a row. I write a letter to Massey Hall. Hi, my name is John Donovan. I work at CKLB in Oshawa, and I'm media. You know, I want three tickets.
Yeah.
People always ask me, why do I want three tickets? Because my best friend, Bob Gannon, wanted a seat between us so he could put his coat down. Thank you, Bob. We had front rows for this show. Bob came out, did the whole acoustic set, and then out come the Hawks, and it was savage. It was unbelievable. These guys just came unfurled. It was one of the last nights with Levon, because Levon left shortly after because he hated the booing. Wasn't a big Dylan fan either, really. But one thing, I'm sorry, when Levon died, Bob never really speaks about people, even close people, when they pass away. Man, he had a lot to say about Levon. But that night, when they came in, they're doing just like Tom Thumb's Blues and they're doing all of these songs. I must admit, I didn't like It Ain't Me, Babe, electric. I preferred it acoustic.
Yeah.
But Garth Hudson on that Lowry of his. And then Dylan sat down at the piano to do Ballad of a Thin Man. And the thing I'll always remember, suddenly this black dude comes out from the same door I used for Wilson Pickett, and he's sitting in a chair. He's going, hey, Bob! Bob! And you see Dylan looking over at him going, who in the hell is this? He goes, hey, Bob! Bob's getting pissed.
Right.
Suddenly Bob looks at him and goes, big smile, little wave. Yeah. It's John Lee Hooker. He's appearing over at the riverboat, and he decides to come over between sets.
He doesn't care how popular Bob is.
But the music that came from those guys, I wish I'd gone both nights like I did on Tour 74.
They were tight.
I read something about the band. They said, they are the loosest, tightest group you'll ever see.
Right.
They look at each other. They just give themselves a look, and boom. That's why Robbie said in this new book I just read on the making of Blonde on Blonde, he said, I was so intimidated in Nashville because these guys weren't just session musicians. When they left the studio, they went into clubs. They were a band. So Robbie really does like bands better than session guys, I guess.
Two interesting notes there is that I was listening to Robbie Robertson in an interview, and he was saying that after that tour was finished, Bob phoned him up and said, yeah, that was pretty good. We should do it again. Which I thought was pretty funny. And the other guy that Bob Dylan talked about a lot after he died was Jerry Garcia. How about that?
So, yeah. And as we both know, Jerry did a lot of Dylan.
Yeah.
A lot of Dylan cover songs.
Yeah. Great list, Johnny. All right, I want to move into our second list, which is we'll go ahead and do the best interviews that John ever experienced. You've done so many, and I'll take this opportunity that we haven't even talked about this yet, but when we worked together at CFRB for 6 years, I mean, some of the ones that really stuck out to me Eric Idle.
Oh, that was great.
Which was so wonderful.
He had fun with you.
Yeah, he did. And he was great. He's just a great talker.
Yes.
And he was wonderful with you.
Hold on, I got to redo my notes. Yeah, I forgot about that one.
Obviously, getting to hang out with Robbie Robertson and Levon Helm. A lot of people are no longer around, you know, which was a really special time. And you brought in so many people from Americana music, folk music, jazz, blues. It was fantastic. So that was just that little five-year period, and we had so much fun bringing those people in.
We had a wonderful time.
But let's go through it, the list of the interviews that stuck out to you the most.
Well, I put down Richie Havens because...
Interesting.
I get too low with no reason. You say it's the moon, or maybe the season. But something is not the same.
Richie Havens, I interviewed more than any other artist ever. And some I had interviewed two or three times. I interviewed Richie in Toronto about four times.
Wonderful man.
Yes, and big fingers.
Yeah, just could. Yeah, he could do that thumb thing over the...
Yeah, like a capo. He used like a capo, right?
Yeah.
Richie, I moved to Montreal, and who do I interview? Richie. Richie's in Montreal.
Of course, he opens the Woodstock film for people looking for a reference.
Yeah, two years later, after I met Richie, he would open Woodstock,
right,
doing Handsome Johnny and so on.
Did wonderful Beatles covers.
Oh.
I love Richie Havens. I really did. I got to see him twice.
When I went to move to Vancouver, we were there in the studio, and he's live. And he said, "What would you like me to finish with, John?" I said, "Could you do the long intro to Here Comes the Sun?" And if you haven't heard him do the really long, he goes on for 60 seconds,
mm-hmm,
and then he does Here Comes the Sun. And Richie, I got to introduce my son to him, and he was so kind to him, and I love the man.
I even liked that final record. He did some like Pink Floyd covers and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
He was a great guy.
Yeah.
Great one. Richie Havens, what's next?
Richie Havens, George Martin and his son Giles.
Now, this happened right after you and I split.
It's too bad.
I went off and did my thing elsewhere, but you were so excited. And this was for the big Beatles Love record, I think.
No. Okay. Love was done with Giles.
Okay, right.
Down at that recording studio under Kiss. Excuse me. No, this was done at CFRB.
Okay.
And he had put out a Best of George Martin box.
All right.
And we talked about it. And I referred to him the entire time as Sir George, which he liked.
Yesterday, all my troubles seem so far away. Now it looks as though they're here to stay. Oh, I believe in yesterday.
It's a wonderful interview, but my most favorite part of the interview happened to be I had this bag with me. You see fans do this all the time.
Right.
And there's Giles sitting there, who you forget how young Giles is. And I said, Sir George, I'd like you to sign an album for you. Oh, all right. So I bring out Off the Beatle Track.
Okay.
Which is a George Martin instrumental album of Beatles hits. And he goes, oh my God, Giles, look at this, it's mint. I don't have this, oh my God. And I brought out Music to Watch Girls By. But Off the Beatle Track,
There's the John Donovan research we're talking about, right?
Oh yeah, I brought that with me.
Yeah.
I have it hanging in the bedroom upstairs, right next to my Johnny Mercer picture.
You see, you know, all the documentaries you see him in, Sir George Martin, he just seems like the most wonderful guy. And there's something very heartwarming about thinking about the Beatles working with him.
I've got the video. I've got that video here of his life, uh-huh, and I've watched it about a half a dozen times. And I just love George Martin. And of course, just because he was with the Beatles, Giles. We got out in the hallway. Giles came up to me and said, "Excuse me." He said, "You mentioned in the interview you interviewed John twice." Yeah. Just, you know, never met them when I was young. Dad wouldn't take me to the studio.
Oh, wow.
He finally, and he's worked with now McCartney, but he really never got to know the Beatles. He was really young.
Sure.
Really, really young.
Great one, Sir George Martin.
William Least Heat Moon.
Okay.
He is of First Nations, I guess.
Yeah, indigenous, sure.
Indigenous. He wrote Blue Highways. And it's a story of a man who gets a letter in the mail one day saying that he's been made redundant. His job is over. He's a teacher. And he, what's he going to do? So he has about $300 or $400 left in his bank account. He's divorced. And he has a little van called Grey Ghost or something. It's a little F-150 van. And from the upper northeast, he decides to go around the edges of the United States. And his stories are incredible. Just one quick one. He's in the middle of nowhere. The characters. And this old timer comes up to him. He's got a mule.
Yeah.
And he goes, hi, how are you doing? You know? And he said, oh, I'm just fine. He says, where are you going? He said, I don't know. That's good. You can't get lost then, can you? I love that line. And when he was in Selma and he saw what he thought was a time where, you know, everything had worked out well, and he saw the segregation and the problems that they still had, he watched a white guy come out of a room, out of a bar, and there was an old black gentleman sitting on a chair, and he kicked the chair and the guy fell over. So after he'd gone away, he went over to help me. He says, oh, don't touch me. Don't help me.
Yeah. Just
and,
make it work.
And he says, I can't believe what just happened to you. He says, son, this is progress. 10 years ago, he would have shot me.
Right.
Anyway, I finally got to meet him. And
we've talked about so many musicians over the last hour, and it's kind of nice to hear about an author.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a wonderful, wonderful man.
Yeah.
And
you talked to Tom Wolfe as well.
Talked to Tom Wolfe and a few other authors.
Yeah.
Because I really did think that when we were going to chat today, it was going to be mostly music. But I still put him in, you know.
Yeah.
Randy Newman, who, Randy, I interviewed maybe 4 or 5 times. My favorite story, and I threw this back at him. 2 times back, I guess, and he looked at me and says, you're lying, John. I said, no, I'm not.
Yeah.
I was backstage. We're getting ready to do a concert at Massey Hall. Different door on the other side. And I open that little door. You've done this. You open the door, and the place is jammed.
Uh-huh.
And I turn around. I said, Randy, you know what? You're sold right out. It's jammed. He said, let me look. He opens the door, closes it, grabs me again by the lapels up here. John, I see 2 seats empty. And then starts laughing. But
a lyricist.
Oh.
What an incredible musician.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. He was just unbelievable. And I got to interview him a few times. And
the track I love is I Miss You. Breaks my heart every time I hear it.
You're far away. And happy, I know. A little bit late, 20 years or so. It's a little bit cold for all those concerned, but I'd sell my soul in your souls for a song. I'll pour my heart out. I miss you. I miss you. I miss you. I'm sorry, but I do.
Great, great. So I think that's 3 or 4. I don't know.
That's 4.
Left, right?
1, 2, 3, 4. B.B. King.
King.
BB's.
Riding with BB.
I started interviewing BB at Q107 and I emceed shows with BB. Because of the things he said about me to my son, I never forgot it. He was just jovial. He was kind. I'd love to talk to him about the Memphis days when he worked at WDIA and he was a disc jockey. And, you know, things such as that. BB was just amazing.
Joe Walsh told a story recently where he said he went to BB right at the end, when just before BB died, and said, do you have any advice for me? You know, after all this years in show business. And he said, you got to get that money. Got to get that money.
Well, that was a whole, you know, that's another program altogether about the African-American artists. I went to see Little Richard down at the lakefront one day, and it was late. Finally went on. I said to the promoter later, what happened? He said, John, he comes from the old school where they got screwed.
Right.
He said, he wanted his money up front. I hadn't collected all the money from the evening yet. So many of those artists did. They got taken by the promoters. So a lot of them like to be paid up front, you know.
It's a great list, an incredible list, and just adds to the lore of the many years of broadcasting.
We didn't talk about my favorite albums.
We got to get there. Okay. Let's do it.
Okay, I can do it fast. I can just go through.
I'm enjoying it. I like talking a little bit about these records. All right, John Donovan, the top five list. This is a big one because I think these are the interviews, they happen, and then you remember them. The concerts, they happen, and then you remember them. But an album, you have forever. And so this is a big
list.
It's
very true.
So, so here we are. Top five albums, according to John Donovan.
An album
Tough
we
me- one.
Yeah. An album we mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
Beatlemania.
It won't be long, yeah. It won't be long, yeah. It won't be long, yeah. Till I belong to you.
First album by the Beatles here. Meet the Beatles was in the States, and With the Beatles was in England, but we got Beatlemania.
When I speak to people my age, I'm a Gen Xer, so Beatles were done when we came of age to listen to music. And people sort of go, yeah, I really like from, you know, maybe Rubber Soul onwards.
Or yeah, that's true. I hear a lot of that.
From Help onwards or whatever it might be. But I think for somebody who actually had life without Beatles and then life with, it must have just been in a moment.
You know, and currently, by the way, just because Charles has just put together, I want to get the 6 CD set of the White Album, but I need to have another job in order to afford it, which is another topic on who can afford these box sets. I guess the next one, especially because I just read the book, Blonde on Blonde.
Well, I see you got your brand new leopard skin pillbox head. Yes, I see you got your brand new leopard skin pillbox head. Well, you must tell me, baby, how your head feels under something like that, under your brand new leopard skin pillbox head.
First double album, first rock double album all time.
Yeah.
And when you read the book, and these Nashville musicians were ready to do songs, a whole album maybe, in 3 or 4 hours.
Right.
When they're recording this album, they're getting paid, and they come, and Bob Johnson, the producer, sends them to the basement to play pool. Bob would sit in the studio sometimes 7 hours as he's writing a song. He hasn't finished it. Then he calls them up. And Charlie McCoy, the harmonica player and guitar player, said, you know, this guy, the longest record we ever played on was Marty Robbins, El Paso. It's a little over 4 minutes. Right. He's doing this thing called Visions of Johanna. It's over 7 minutes long. Are we going, is he crazy?
Yeah.
We didn't know how crazy he was until we got to Sad Eyed Lady of the Lowlands at 11 minutes. But now that I've read it and I've seen who played on each track and the work and the rewriting and the verses that got rewritten, it's just amazing. And I'm proud to say, thanks to a band fan from Vancouver, she managed to get for me, that I've been looking for 20 years, a mono version of Blonde on Blonde, Canadian version. Because it was different than any other. Al Cooper's organ was up there. But it's also, it's got a line in there where he flubs. Since then, even on the bootleg albums, they've corrected it.
Oh, wow.
This is the only one. I got upstairs. I love it. So Blonde on Blonde.
It feels like it's a lyrical touchstone moment. Like, you know, what he does with his lyrics on that particular record, even compared to what he had done prior to that.
Well, they call Bringing It All Back Home, Highway 61 Revisited, and Blonde on Blonde like the triumvirate. I mean, those three albums were just incredible. But Blonde on Blonde, probably my favorite of the three.
It's a great one.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Moving along. The Brown Album by the band.
Brown Album by
Second album.
Yeah.
John Simon produced that as well as music from Big Pink.
Big Pink's first.
Big Pink was first, yeah. But I actually like the Brown Album better, as it's called, because it's got a brown. I've got Elliot Landy's painting of the band, an original, upstairs. That record, I mean, you know, up on Cripple Creek and just all the wonderful songs that are on there and the textures on it. And John Simon talks about Rag Mama Rag. And how there was going to be no bass in it. So they said, you can play horns, can't you? Yeah. Well, you're going to play tuba for the bass lines.
It's fascinating. I remember hearing a story. I think we were doing a little documentary at CBC about, you know, the night they drove Old Dixie down or one of these songs. And the comment was, how is this song not 100 years old?
Yeah.
You know, and I love that about the band because they're just instant classics. They feel like they've been in the songbook than longer than they actually have.
Well, it's often talked about that during their period at the beginning, everyone else is doing psychedelia.
Right.
Then there's these guys that look like a bunch of Mennonites or Quakers or something, right? And they're in the woods and they look like farmers.
Marshmallow overcoat.
The marshmallow overcoat. Or as Richard used to say, we're going to call ourselves the Crackers.
The Honkies.
The Honkies. Personally.
Great record, though.
Yeah. The Rolling Stones, funny enough, I went to all their concerts at Maple Leaf Gardens.
I can't believe they haven't come up in conversation.
But. Yeah, the Rolling Stones. For concerts, I should have put the Rolling Stones and Stevie Wonder opening at Maple Leaf Gardens in '72. We were doing that show, and so I covered the afternoon show, and then the night show. But the Rolling Stones stripped because I just like to hear what they did with Keith playing Love in Vain and all of these songs, Wild Horses, but just stripped right down.
I'm gonna tell you how it's gonna be. You're gonna give your love to me. I'm gonna love you night and day. You know my love and I fade away.
Is that like a bit of a later record?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah,
it's a later record. I mean, there's a lot of albums by the Stones earlier that I could have picked, but I decided to go with that one.
Right. So it's nice to hear what they could do, you know, take away some of the dressing.
Yeah. Number five, Paul Simon and the album Paul Simon. His first solo album after he and Garfunkel went separate. He's singing Duncan and those types of songs.
Couple in the next room, bound to win a prize. They've been going at it all night long. Well, I'm trying to get some sleep, but these motel walls are cheap. Lincoln Duncan is my name, and here's my song.
I didn't know what I'd think of Paul Simon by himself, but I fell in love with that album. I
was crazy for Ryman. There goes Ryman Simon.
Oh, there goes Ryman. There's another great one. It's a really, really good one.
That's got American Tune on it, something we talked about earlier.
Yeah. And again, going back to John Simon, I'd forgotten that he produced Bookends.
Yeah.
You know? But I want to throw a sixth in, only because it meant a lot to me, was Simon and Garfunkel with Parsley, Sage, Rosemary, and Thyme.
Beautiful.
Oh, what a great album, you know?
Are you going to Scarborough? Parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme. Remember me to one who lives there. She once was a true love of mine.
So magical. I remember I got to the one penny for the 13 records. You remember that promo they used to do,
Columbia House or whatever.
And so I thought to myself, there's some records I've heard about my whole life that I should probably get, and that was one of the ones I've got. And I remember listening just to the heck out of that cassette. Yeah, Parsley, Sage.
There's an article this week that's out that not only has vinyl come back, which you know,
yeah,
But the cassette is coming back. Mark, I had 6 garbage bags
filled
with cassettes, and I threw them all out.
It's funny.
My son almost killed me.
In the Beastie Boys book that's just come out, they talk a little bit about cassettes, and they say, you know, MP3s get a bad rap before, you know, because of their fidelity and so on. He says, try listening to a cassette that's been, like, hanging around in your, you know, dust-filled pocket for a couple years. It doesn't sound any better. So, you know, people can love cassettes all they want.
Yeah, but, yeah.
That is a fantastic list.
Well,
a great list of records. That was so fantastic. Great stories, great lists, great music. And you can follow John Donaby on Facebook. He's there posting fun and interesting pictures and stories. And thanks to John for just being so giving and thoughtful with his lists, and in fact, with the entire interview. It was just great. On Monday, a visit from Montreal. Guitarist Jordan Officer will be my guest, and he's had a fantastic solo career, but also his time with Susan Arioli. Jordan will be here. We'll speak to you then and for as long as we can. I'm Mark Wigmore. Thanks for listening.